Hello everyone and welcome to Raya Affairs. My name is Nicola and I'll be your host for this episode. Raya is a youth-led international think tank that translates the abstract world of international affairs by simplifying rather than generalizing. Raya is a place where you come to learn about the stories and worries of political leaders, the behind the scenes of decision makers, and how politics impacts and changes your life. This is Raya Affairs, filling you in wherever you are. As always, we start with a disclaimer that expressed opinion in these episodes are welcome, even though they are not a direct reflection of Raya, as we specialize in unbiased writing. So in today's episode, we will be discussing a dramatic case of political transition and its consequences in West Africa. Our focus is Niger and the man at the center of the current political turmoil in the country, General Tchiani. So Tchiani came to power in July 2023 through a coup that removed the elected president, Mohamed Bazoum. And since then, he has reoriented the country's security and foreign policy. He has broken with Western partners and triggered Niger's withdrawal from ECOWAS. So we will discuss the consequences of these geopolitical shifts and what this means for the future of Niger and the whole Sahel region. Joining me today is Sophia Ena, who recently wrote an article on the topic. So hello, Sophia, and thank you very much for joining me today. Would you like to introduce yourself to our audience?
Hello, everyone. Thank you, Nicola, for having me. My name is Sophia Ena. I'm from Italy, and I'm a second year student of a master's degree program in international security. And I'm part of the research analysis team at Raya.
Great. Thank you very much, Sophia. And as you know, before to start to talk about today's topic, I'll ask you to answer our usual icebreaking question that we ask every guest on the podcast. So could you tell us which leader, either dead or alive, who has impacted the world, would you want to have a conversation with and why?
So I would probably choose Angela Merkel. Her leadership during challenging times in Europe and her pragmatic and steady approach have greatly influenced global politics. I would like to learn how she managed difficult decisions and maintain unity in diverse situations.
Wow, that's very interesting. And actually, I remember in one of the recent episodes, I think it was the one with Dario, with the director of Raya, where we talked a bit about the story of Raya, etc. I think he had the same pick. He chose Angela Merkel as a good German. And it was funny to hear that from you as well today. But definitely a super interesting political figure. And I completely understand why you chose her. I would actually enjoy a conversation or a dinner with Angela as well. Thank you very much, Sophia, for the answer. And now I would say that we can start our conversation about your article. So let's begin with the core theme of your article. You describe Tchiani's leadership as cold. Could you explain what this means in the context of Niger's current political and security environment? And what are the key developments since the coup that have contributed to the current situation?
So describing Tchiani's leadership as cold reflects the way in which his governance has distanced Niger from his traditional Western partners, while failing to offer the stability or progress that he promised. Since the coup in July 2023, which removed the ex-president Bazoum, Tchiani has positioned himself as a defendant of the country's sovereignty. He expelled the French and American troops. He restricted foreign media and also pursued economic decoupling from the West. And politically, he led Niger out of ECOWAS into the newly formed alliance of the states of the Sahel, while at the same time deepening ties with Russia and other non-Western actors. However, this radical shift has not improved the country's situation. Instead, his leadership has left Niger more isolated, economically strained, and also increasingly insecure. Specifically, extremist violence has escalated, with jihadist groups asserting greater control over the key transport routes to Niamey, for example. And on the economic front, sanctions and disrupted trade and growing debt have led to severe inflation, jumping to 15% in 2024. So his leadership can be called cold, not only because of his strategic detachment, but also because of its impact on the country.
And in your article, you mentioned that one of Chani's key justifications for the coup was the promise to strengthen Niger's counterterrorism efforts and to restore security in the country. So could you walk us through what has happened on the ground in terms of extremist violence since the coup? And how have groups like the Islamic State in the Sahel or JNIM expanded their operations in the country?
Exactly. In fact, since the coup, extremist violence in Niger has intensified. So groups such as the Islamic State in Sahel or JNIM has taken advantage of the country's instability, political instability, to expand their presence. For example, they have consolidated control over the northeastern and also the southern part of the country, and are also pushing towards the eastern outskirts of Niamey. In Tahoua region, reports of civilian extortion have gone up significantly, and also the military fatalities have more than tripled since the junta took power. And at the same time, JNIM has extended its operation into also the southwestern Tillabéri and also the southern Dosa region, signaling an expansion of their territorial reach. And so the rise in attacks, especially in these regions, point to a clear shift in the militant activity since the coup, with both groups exploiting this weakened security landscape to strengthen their foothold in the country.
So as you already mentioned, there are reports that the number of civilian and military fatalities has at least more than doubled in the first year of Chinese rule compared with the period before the coup. What has been the main problem for the government's counterterrorism strategy and tactics? In your article, you mention manpower shortages and a heavy reliance on air force and drone strikes. But is it possible that Chani's decision to cut ties with Western allies also played a role in this context?
Yes, absolutely. Multiple factors have affected the effectiveness of Niger's counterterrorism strategy. One major issue has been the shortage of ground forces. And to manage these, the junta has leaned heavily on air force and drone strikes. But the continued increase in large-scale militant attacks suggests that these tools alone haven't been enough to disrupt or weaken insurgent operations. In addition, the decision to cut ties with the Western allies and withdraw from ECOWAS had a real impact. So it reduced Niger's access to advanced military equipment, technical training, and also international financial support, and all of which had previously helped booster its counterterrorism capacity. And without this backing, the junta struggled to contain the growing threat. And so this combination of limited manpower and also reduced international support has made more difficult to respond effectively to the evolving also security crisis in the country.
And in addition to the security crisis, as you already mentioned, there is also a major economic dimension to this story, as Chani's decision to withdraw from ECOWAS has had severe economic repercussions. So could you please help our listeners understand the magnitude of these economic consequences, and specifically what trade, budgetary or humanitarian challenges has Niger faced as a result of this move?
Yes, the economic decision of Chani to pull out of ECOWAS has been significant. Almost immediately after the withdrawal, most of Niger's borders and trade routes were shut down. On top of that, financial transactions with partner governments were suspended, and the country's assets in external banks were frozen. And these measures cut off critical economic flows at a time when Niger was already struggling. And as a result, the government was forced to reduce its national budget of 2023 by 40%. And it also defaulted on four separate debt payments since the coup of a total of $519 million. And these economic pressure have pushed up food prices across the country, hitting civilians very hard. And humanitarian impact has been particularly severe since the coup. In fact, the number of people living in extreme poverty has grown to 14 million, and that's around 54% of Niger's total population. So the economic crisis is not just about budgets and numbers, but is also deeply affecting the people's daily lives.
And as you said before, one of the main shifts in the political position taken by this government was to cut ties with the country's traditional allies, France and the United States. At the same time, aligning more closely with Russia and other emerging regional players. What do you think is driving this pivot away from traditional Western allies? And what does Chani hope to gain from it?
So Chani's change in foreign policy mainly comes from his concern about Niger's security and economic independence. He didn't agree with the previous government relying heavily on foreign troops from France and the United States and seeing their presence as not very effective in solving Niger's security problems. And he also felt that this dependence limited the country's ability to handle its own security and fight terrorism. So after the coup, he pushed out Western military forces and instead focused on building stronger ties within the region, creating the alliance of the states of the Sahel, and aligning more with Russia and other regional partners. And on the economic side, Chani wanted Niger to have more control over its natural resources. So he criticized past policies that gave too much power to foreign companies, especially when it comes to the uranium mining, which is a big part of Niger's economy. And under his leadership, the government took over uranium operations that were managed by the French company Orano and gave mining permits to local Nigerian companies. So the goal here is to reduce reliance on foreign companies and also boost government income from this mining and also to strengthen Niger's economic sovereignty.
So if I understand correctly, there's a security dimension to it and Chani wanting to rely less on foreign troops and to reduce foreign involvement in the counterterrorism efforts within the country. But at the same time, there's also an economic dimension to it. And as you said, there is the aspect of mining and wanting to restore economic sovereignty within the country and regain control over this really important sector of the country's economy. But on the security side of things, do you believe, because as you said before, Niger is actually facing a lot of problems in dealing with terrorist groups within the country. Do you believe that Russia can realistically fill the vacuum left by Western powers in this context?
That's a great question. Right now, it's still unclear if Russia can fully replace the support Niger used to get from Western countries. After the coup, Chani made deals with Moscow to get military help, trading access to key resources like gold and uranium in return. But Russia has its own challenges, especially with the ongoing war in Ukraine, which probably limits how much economic and technical aid it can send to Niger. So it's hard to say how much Niger can really count on Russia to fill all these gaps. And there's also a risk here. So relying too much on Russia might leave Niger more isolated and dependent on just one partner. And that could make it tougher to handle growing security threats like violent extremism and human trafficking.
And now I would like to talk about the alliance of the Sahel states. So kind of at the regional level, Chani has pushed for this regional realignment by forming this alliance of Sahel states with Mali and Burkina Faso. What are the goals of this alliance? And do you think it could provide a functional alternative to ECOWAS in terms of both regional security and economic cooperation?
So the alliance, which includes also Mali and Burkina Faso, aims to create a new regional partnership focused on security and economic cooperation. The goal is to work together to address common challenges, especially rising extremist violence, and also to reduce reliance on ECOWAS and traditional Western partners. However, Niger withdrawal from ECOWAS in January 2025 has already made economic problems worse. Leaving the ECOWAS customs union means that Niger now faces new trade rules, including having to apply to the common external tariff on imports and defaulting to World Trade Organization most favored nation rates for goods from former ECOWAS partners. And because Niger is landlocked, the situation is even more challenging. So it increases in transportation costs, limit access to coastal ports, which are vital for trade of the country. And this is expected to push also tariffs and domestic prices higher, putting additional pressure on Niger's economy. And given these challenges, while the alliance aims to offer an alternative, it's still uncertain whether it can fully replace ECOWAS in providing effective security and economic cooperation in the region.
Your article also mentions Morocco's growing role in the region. So how is Morocco positioning itself in this situation, and what implications does its involvement have for the balance of power in the Sahel region?
Yeah, so Morocco is definitely stepping up its game in the Sahel region right now. With all the instability and shifting alliances, Morocco is trying to present itself as a steady and reliable partner. One big move they've made is developing the Dakhla Container Terminal in Western Sahara, which is really important because it offers landlocked countries in the Sahel a new way to access the Atlantic Ocean. And why does that matter? Well, traditionally, countries like Niger have relied heavily on ECOWAS ports for trade. But now Morocco is offering an alternative route, which could reduce those countries' dependence on ECOWAS. So this shift gives also Morocco a stronger foothold in the region. So basically, Morocco is using this opportunity to increase its influence politically and economically, positioning itself as a key player in the Sahel's future.
Finally, looking ahead, what do you see as the most pressing challenges facing Niger under Tchani's leadership? And do you think is there a path towards stability, or are we likely to see further deterioration in the country? And finally, how does Niger's crisis reflect broader trends in the Sahel region? What should the international community be paying attention to right now?
Looking ahead, Niger faces several pressing challenges under Chinese leadership, and the path towards stability appears uncertain. On the security front, extremist violence has intensified since the coup in 2023. So, as we said, groups like the Islamic State in the Sahel and JNIM have expanded their activities. Just in March 2025, there were deadly attacks across multiple fronts, including a mosque attack that killed 44 civilians, and also clashes with armed groups in Agadez. And politically, the situation is also shifting. In March, the government approved the recommendations from a national dialogue that effectively extended military rule until at least 2030. So these steps have raised concerns about the prospects for a return to civilian governance. And from a regional perspective, Niger's crisis reflects a broader trend in the Sahel, where military-led governments are becoming more common and the anti-Western sentiment is growing. So the international community should be paying close attention to two things. First, the risk of regional spillover, both in terms of terrorist violence and political realignments. And second, also the long-term consequences of the security vacuums and economic isolation. So as the Niger deepens ties with new partners like Russia, it's not clear whether those relationships can fully compensate for the loss of traditional support networks coming from Western countries.
Great. I would say that with this, we can end today's episode. Thank you very much, Sophia, for joining me today and for sharing all these insights with us. I hope to see you soon again on the Rai Affairs podcast. This has been an incredibly interesting discussion on such a complex topic. And to our listeners, if you enjoyed this episode, make sure to check out Sophia's article at raiagroup.org and to follow us on social media to receive updates on every new article and new contents. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you next time.